Did your angel fall? Leave you all alone in that place? Did your hero...
This is Justice Week on Covenant Eyes Radio. All this week we are featuring podcasts and articles on our blog that highlight the connection between pornography and sex trafficking. Today we are speaking with Steve Wagner, former director of the Human Trafficking Program at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. As director, Mr. Wagner started the Rescue and Restore Victims of Human Trafficking Public Awareness Campaign, designed to increase identification and rescue of victims of trafficking. Today, we will speak with him about how American children are exploited in this crime.
All of the focus of the federal government, really to this day, is on victims from other countries. But in fact, victims who are Americans, principally American kids, outnumber foreign victims by 11 to 1. In terms of domestic victims, I think this problem is ubiquitous. I think you find it in every community. Our best estimate is that there are about 250,000 juvenile victims of commercial sex exploitation every year.
Steve will also talk about how pornography is linked to other forms of commercial sexual exploitation.
There's no question that the demand is being driven by the epidemic of pornography. Who is it that is willing to pay to have sex with kids? Well, it's somebody who's deeply addicted to pornography.
Co-hosting with me today is William Payne, intern for the Pure Justice Program at Pure Hope.
It's not your fault.
Mr. Wagner, can you tell us a little bit about your background and the work you're doing now?
I was the director of the Human Trafficking Program at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services from 2003 to 2006. I discovered on arriving there that we really were having a very difficult time identifying victims, and consequently I started the Rescue and Restore Victims of Human Trafficking Public Awareness Campaign, the Victims Hotline, local anti-trafficking coalitions in 17 cities, and a number of new grant programs for organizations that are in the business of doing direct outreach in order to better find victims. Leaving HHS, I started the Renewal Forum, which is a nonprofit that allows me and some of my former colleagues to continue our work in the area of human trafficking. What we realized in getting out of the federal government is that all of the focus of the federal government, really to this day, is on victims from other countries. But in fact, victims who are Americans, principally American kids, outnumber foreign victims by 11 to 1. So this is overwhelmingly the population of human trafficking victims in the United States, namely American kids who are exploited through commercial sex. So we wanted to help states put in place effective laws that would empower local police to address the issue of human trafficking. And more we've realized that having a good law is useful, but certainly not a sufficient condition for getting local action going. There are states that have decent laws that have had not a single prosecution of a trafficking case. So that's when we initiated the model city concept of putting in place in a couple of sites all of the programs, activities, and policies that we think are needed to effectively address the phenomenon of human trafficking, mostly the commercial sex exploitation of kids. So we're hard at work in Kansas City and expect to bring online another couple of sites to demonstrate that we really can, through an unusual collaboration between non-governmental organizations and law enforcement, that we can make a dent in this crisis, and hopefully then others will want to replicate those models in additional communities.
And in the U.S., what are the basic hubs you see, the cities where you see the trafficking taking place the most?
Well, I don't think that we really have hubs. In terms of domestic victims, I think this problem is ubiquitous. I think you find it in every community. And our working assumption is that the extent of the problem is proportional to the population. So, you know, big cities, you're going to have a bigger problem simply because there are more people. You know, with the exception of Las Vegas, I don't think there are cities that particularly have a disproportional problem. I think people in any community should assume that the exploitation of kids is a big problem. For example, in Kansas City, our working assumption is that there are 1,600 kids victimized in that metropolitan area every year. And, of course, they're not seeing anywhere near that number. So this is a well-hidden problem.
Wow. No, I'm actually from Kansas City, and I actually heard about your effort there back in March with the conference you had. I really appreciate the work.
Which was co-sponsored by the National Coalition's Kansas City office. Phil Cosby and Kathy Cosby are very important and valued collaborators of ours in that model city effort.
So, Mr. Wagner, a lot of people listening to this podcast are concerned about the subject of pornography.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you see as the connection between pornography and sex trafficking?
Well, you know, this is we're talking about a terrible toll on human beings. You know, our best estimate is that there are about 250,000 juvenile victims of commercial sex exploitation every year in the U.S., which under federal law makes them victims of human trafficking. It's a tremendous personal toll, and this is ultimately an economic crime, which means it needs supply and demand. It needs a supply of victims, and it needs a demand represented by people willing to pay to have sex with kids. And you take away either of those elements, and this phenomenon collapses. You know, this is an economic crime. This is about greed and making money off of the exploitation of other human beings. So on the supply side, you know, why do we have so many victims? Well, we have victims because of abuse in homes, which is, you know, we're seeing about 250,000 serious cases of physical and sexual abuse of kids every year in our homes. And the phenomenon of throwaway kids, it is shocking to me that in serious cases of a missing kid, you know, a kid who's run away, presumably run away from home, only about 1 out of 5 of those cases is reported to the police, which means in 80% of the cases, nobody's looking for the kid. This is the throwaway kid, the kid who's no longer convenient, you know, is in the way and is kicked out of the house. On the demand side, there's no question that demand is being driven by the epidemic of pornography. Who is it that is willing to pay to have sex with kids? Well, it's somebody who's deeply addicted to pornography and who, because of the phenomenon of escalation, is driven to act out their fantasies with live victims. You know, and this is typical pornography. It doesn't stay private. It doesn't stay in a person's home. It requires ever greater doses in order to get the same rush that the addict had, and the addiction to pornography is very similar in this regard to other substance abuses, and the addicts are driven to seek out live victims. And if there's 250,000 victims of human trafficking in the U.S., then there's something on the order of more than 10 times that number of people willing to pay, as I say, to have sex with kids. So it's a huge population of predators out there, and they have been created through pornography.
According to Shared Hope International, 1 out of 5 pornographic images online are of a child. So do you see much connection in the actual production of pornography itself and the sexual exploitation of children?
Well, the production of pornography would qualify as commercial sex exploitation. So a lot of pornography, sadly, is created in the home. You know, it's like abuse. It's often perpetrated by caregivers, by trusted family or friends.
There's another aspect of the connection between porn and trafficking I wanted to get your take on. I've heard that it's been used in the traffickers' attempts to train these victims to participate in acts of commercial sex. Have you seen much of that in what you've read or heard?
Well, the grooming of victims is is virtually universal, and basically that's a polite way of saying the rape and acclimation of victims to the sort of sex acts that they will be paid to perform. There was a case in Kansas City recently, a man just sentenced for his role in the trafficking of his stepdaughter with the acquiescence of the biological mother. And they trained this young girl, who was 14 years old, to be a dominatrix. And, you know, they were catering to people interested in S&M type activities. And part of the training was watching S&M videos. So that's a very specific case of a kid being groomed through the use of pornography. But I think it's pretty universal.
You were the director of the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives. So what do you see as the role of the faith community in combating trafficking?
My work there was unrelated to trafficking. I was the director of the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives at Housing and Urban Development, which was a wonderful position from which to observe the incredible variety of social services being delivered by faith communities. It's I think there are very few people who understand the extent to which human need is being addressed by faith communities and the extent to which we as a society are dependent on faith communities to address those human needs. In the area of human trafficking, I think there's a lot that faith communities can do. First of all, they are often the most in touch with what's going on in their communities. I think leaders of faith communities are uniquely aware of what's happening in their communities. And therefore, if police departments would provide an open door for leaders of faith communities to tell them about suspected cases of trafficking, I think we would dramatically increase the number of cases that we find and the number of victims that are rescued. So that's one thing. And then, you know, we have really no response to this phenomenon of the commercial sex exploitation of kids in terms of dedicated facilities and social services. This is the most underserved population of people in serious need in the country today. These kids who are exploited through commercial sex are profoundly traumatized. They have a lot of needs, and it is often the faith community that steps forward first to respond to human needs. We need to construct at the community level dedicated facilities for the care of these kids. And that effort needs to be undertaken by the nonprofit sector, and faith communities should be active participants both in the initial construction and the operation of dedicated facilities for victims of trafficking. We are looking at creating a facility in Kansas City as part of our efforts there, and faith communities are really chomping at the bit, I think, to contribute to that work. I think they're very excited about the possibility of allowing Kansas City to respond effectively to the phenomenon of exploited youth in their midst.
So what kind of changes do you see happening in Kansas City as a result of your initiative there?
Well, number one, there's going to be greater activism as a result of our efforts. There are a lot of organizations that have stepped forward to participate in the Model City program. We are not only informing them of the extent of the problem, but giving them an opportunity to really do something in the community. And as that effort grows, we're also going to get the police to take this problem more seriously than they have in the past. You know, our game plan for Kansas City is the full implementation of our action plan, which is about 35 specific steps that we want to see, which we think are needed in order to effectively respond to trafficking. And we're very excited that it looks like, you know, we're well on our way to implementing those steps. And so in the end, you'll just see a much greater level of attention and activism in terms of finding victims, you know, getting out there and looking for the victims, both by non-governmental organizations and law enforcement.
Do you have any suggestions for just the individual listener, just someone who's saying, I care about this subject, I care about this cause, I want to try to prevent, both on the supply side and the demand side, I want to try to prevent these things from ever happening to the people I know or to the people in my community or to the children in my city? What kind of things would you say would be good as preventative measures?
The burdens on family, of course, it's a joy, but the burdens to effectively raise a kid are very substantial. And even a loving family does not necessarily make a kid immune from the possibility of exploitation. Kids can be seduced into running away with traffickers, are lured by predators online and in the malls and elsewhere. You have to inform your kids about the dangers that lurk out there, and you know, you need to be mindful of the threat that's out there. It's much greater than most of us realize. The risk is not that a kid is going to be snatched off the street by a stranger. That is extremely rare. The threat is that a kid is going to be lured into a meeting or lured into running away with a predator by a process of enticement. You know, it's repeated contacts and making oneself available, again, either online or in person in public places. So, you know, we all need to inform our kids of the dangers that lurk out there.
Who'd be the kinds of people that parents would encourage their kids to be careful about?
Well, it's any adult that is not known to you. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's anyone, any adult who makes overtures to a kid. And even that, you know, is not sufficient. As we see in many cases, you know, predators are often people known to kids and trusted. But the starting point is don't have contact with adults that you don't know. You know, don't assume that a stranger contacting you via the internet who pretends to be a kid is in fact a juvenile.
What do you see as steps that the federal government can take nationally?
I think actually the federal government is doing about all that we can expect the federal government to do,
mm-hmm.
Which is not a lot. But the reality is that federal law enforcement is a very tiny organization collectively. There really aren't that many agents who are available to investigate these crimes. The key lies in getting local law enforcement and local communities involved in the fight against trafficking. I think it's a profound mistake to see this as something that the federal government can handle for us, because they just can't.
You have been listening to Covenant Eyes Radio. For more information about Steve Wagner's current work, visit renewalforum.org. To hear more of our podcasts, look for us on iTunes or visit the Covenant Eyes blog, Breaking Free, at covenanteyes.com/blog.
It's not my fault.